Hi, and welcome to the Just Riding Along show.
Hello, and welcome to episode 230. Tonight's show is brought to you by Boys Night Spring 26. Andrea is not joining us tonight. She is having carpal tunnel surgery tomorrow and is going to get some rest. So that is what's going on.
Is that happening? Did she mention she was going out of town to do that or something?
Yep, that is out of town tomorrow.
Ah.
It's one of those drive over, drive back. So.
Oh, I thought it was Memphis out of town.
No, out of town like Colorado Springs.
Oh, okay.
And then she's going to go to Memphis while she's recovering and can't do anything else.
Maybe that's what I was thinking of.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, 3:30 departure tomorrow morning. Hurrah. Let's get this bitch done then. My week didn't really have much action. Did a little bit of trials bike riding. And the one thing that was actionable is, or was an action, it was interesting, is yesterday I bought a new to me pickup truck. So that was pretty cool.
Well, tell us about it.
2007 Frontier V6. Four-door, six-foot bed, color-match topper.
I thought you didn't want the long boy doors.
No, I didn't want the long boy doors because it is extremely rare to find four doors with six-foot bed. I didn't want a four-door, five-foot bed truck.
Got it.
And this popped up, and I was like, I don't think that's actually right. Like, that's listed wrong. And it popped up on Sunday, and Monday I paid a deposit. Wednesday we went and picked it up, and it's pretty dope.
Very cool. Is it basically one generation old? Is that accurate?
Yeah, that truck ran from like 5 to 21, like that body style did.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, but they did a different motor or transmission towards the end, right?
Yep, and like 15 and later you started getting some 9-speed autos, I think.
Okay, but same engine.
I can't remember when they started going to the 3.8 instead of the 4.0 V6 that they kind of used in everything for a long time.
Got it. Well, cool, man. I'm pumped for you.
And it's 6-speed.
Damn.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't like sticks anymore. I drove a stick my entire life, and it's honestly super nice to not do that anymore. And it used to be, though, automatic transmission cars were not that great. But they've gotten a hell of a lot better, so I'm not as scared of them anymore.
Sure. No, it's just a 5-speed auto or a 6-speed manual. So the 6-speed is only in manual. So it's kind of nice.
No, I'm not saying you made the wrong choice. Just in like super modern cars.
Yeah.
There's a lot of reasons you don't see manuals anymore. We've gotten pretty good at autos and people just don't want to shift anymore. And I have to say, living the life of not dicking around with shifting is honestly pretty nice. Like a race car. Yeah, it could still be fun. But even then, man. Some of these modern cars, the transmissions are so decent that you'll be fine. Yeah, that's cool, though. Very cool.
Yeah, I'm pretty pumped. So.
And all of your other... Oh, I guess you still have your old pickup.
For a little bit, yeah.
Okay. But you already have it, like, ready to go?
Kind of. I mean, it's a single cab truck. There's literally nowhere to put that much stuff to clean out of it. My point being, like, if there's someone that may want it, and if they said I want it today, I could be like ready in like 30 minutes. So
got it.
Yep. And it's going to, I don't know. I'm kind of bummed. Like, I mean, this is definitely what I wanted. I wanted a bigger truck, but I got it home and like saw it beside my truck and I'm like, damn, it's not a cool little truck anymore. But I also, on the way home, was like, man, this thing might need brakes. As I was pushing on the brakes already, I looked down and I'm still doing like 74 or something. And I'm like, oh no, this truck's just actually fast. So it's also been really weird. You know, the trucks look very different inside, but it's kind of like if you have a not extremely shaped t-shirt on backwards and you're like, something's just not right. And then you're like, my shirt's on backwards. It's like I'm in the wrong Frontier. You know, like the shifter is just a little bit different location. The you know, the armrest is a little different. But it feels very Nissan inside, as it should, because they're both Nissan vehicles. So, yeah, that's just kind of interesting. but that's all I got.
What year was your old one?
98.
Okay.
And that one was a 4-cylinder 5-speed.
Yeah, man. Pretty cool. Does this have like proper low range gearbox and stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
Yeah, in 4-low first gear, I could probably just like leave the truck and like walk beside it drinking a Coke as it drove itself down the road. It's pretty low.
That is pretty fancy.
It's fancy enough for me, especially coming from a 98 Frontier, you know, like the bar's so low you could trip over it. So
does this thing have like backup cameras and stuff?
No, it will, but it doesn't.
Got it.
I mean, all that stuff has gotten so cheap, like even some semi name brand stuff you can get into for, you know, $300 to $500, like probably a little cheaper if you tried. But yeah, I'm not. Like, it doesn't play MP3s right now. Like, you can't hook your phone up to the radio. You can play CDs, and you can listen to the radio. So, it's going to get a head unit and a backup cam at some point. Because it would be nice, since it's just considerably, like, it's probably 2 foot longer than Andrea's 5th-gen 4Runner. So, you know, it is a big vehicle. It's not wide, though. So, it's still, like, is it as easy to park as my Frontier or my Jeep Wrangler? Absolutely not. But is it as wide as an F-350? No. So, yeah, that's...
Yeah, at the shop, we have an F-350 that's lifted, and it has an 8-foot bed with a service bed on it, and it is so gigantic.
Oh, I know
it
what that truck is.
Absolutely
okay.
Ridiculous. It's yeah. Just, they're so big. It's like 30 feet long.
Mm-hmm.
It's like as long as our full-size Sprinter. It's just nuts.
It's a big bitch.
It is a big bitch.
Well, what have you been doing, Kenny?
I did not ride my mountain bike. I will be doing a St. George trip, maybe definitely at the end of the month. Going to do the normal family vacation down there. So that'll be fun. I'll ride lots of bikes there. But I did ride moto last weekend. It's been unseasonably warm. I believe next week it's going to be in the 80s, which is absolutely insane. But I went, I don't know what this place is called. It's the San Rafael Swell area. But I went south. I went south of I-70 and then rode a little bit north. Basically, there's some like tunnels that you go under I-70. I've actually got some really cool pictures. But I just found a spot on a map and I'm like, hey, I'm going to go explore that like I usually do. And this spot was really freaking cool. It was a little bit further away than I would like. But man, is it a cool spot. Not a lot of people out there. I saw a group of maybe, it was a lot, probably at least 15 brand new Jeep Gladiators, all on like 40s with ridiculous stuff done to them. Like every single one had $50,000 worth of stuff done to it. And they were freaking wheeling those things. It was pretty cool. Like they were not scared. So nice new vehicles and they were beating on them. So that
so
was kind of fun to
see. Actually have money.
Yeah. But they were actually using them, which is cool. They were not pavement princesses.
No, I truly believe that a lot of people that build pavement princess trucks, it's because they have the dream of driving off-road. And then they realize that in order to do that, they can't afford if anything goes wrong.
Yeah, I think that's a fairly accurate statement. But yeah, it was cool, really cool spot. I can't remember the name of this one trail, but there's a ton of Jeep roads out there. I mostly rode Jeep road stuff, but a lot of it was very techie. Like it would be definitely a vehicle with lockers on 40s with spotters, like pretty big boy shit. And so that kind of stuff is usually really fun on a moto because you can kind of, you can cheat weave a little bit. You can pick your line and weave a lot more than a Jeep could. But just to give you an idea of what the terrain was like, none of it was ridiculously steep, but it was just endless like step ups and stuff, and I rode pretty hard and I did 50 miles maybe, and I was the most gassed that I've been in a super long time. I was fairly nonstop, like I didn't really dick around very much. It was probably a 3-hour ride, 4 hours, I don't know, somewhere in that ballpark, 3.5. But I was just poof. Like I had to turn around. I found a really cool spot. And just nobody was out there. I was rallying for, you know, 4 or 5 miles one direction. It was a very, had a white rim vibe to it. Really picturesque, just amazing stuff. Pretty techy, but nobody was out there. Not a single damn person was out there. So cool. And I was just freaking taking it in, enjoying it, riding hard. And it was getting later in the day. I was getting pretty far out. And I just decided to turn around because I was like actually tired. And I'm glad that I did, because by the time I got back to the truck, I was fully cooked. But it was fun. Super cool. We just have so much cool stuff out here. I know I've said it a million times, but I just basically picked not a random spot on the map. I just looked at the map. I said, I have not been there before. There's a bunch of cool, twisty looking roads on the map over here, and it's all off road, and all this stuff links up, and I'm just going to go see what happens. And sure enough, it was freaking awesome. Just a million different directions you can go. Super cool stuff. I mean, like national park level stuff out there, but it's just dirt roads and you can do whatever you want because Utah's cool like that. So I'm really still enjoying it, enjoying the Husky. It's set up really well for what I do. I don't really want to change anything. It's got, I think I'm at 200 hours now, something like that. So I got a lot of hours on it. Still runs great. So I'm just going to keep running it until I have issues. Don't know what I'd get next because I really like the kind of high performance four stroke dirt bike thing. They're really good.
200 two stroke, man. That's what you need.
Yeah.
I know you don't want that. I'm not saying
that they're bad. I think they could be a lot of fun for the riding that I do, but I don't know. I just kind of like the chassis. I like the motor. It's super linear power. There's like a decent amount of power down low. There's really good power in the mid. There's really good power up top. It's been super reliable thus far. In theory, I don't have to worry about, you know, putting in pistons and doing all that kind of stuff. And I ride it so much that I think having a four stroke that I can put ridiculous miles on is going to be a good thing. I think it would be great if it were 20 pounds lighter. I think that would be really cool. But I don't know if it was 20 pounds lighter. I just don't think I would do a whole lot on it that I don't do today.
Right. It wouldn't really change how you ride it. It would just make picking it up easier.
Yeah, but I just don't drop my bike that often because I'm not doing like ultra rowdy stuff. I'm just doing stuff that you got to pay attention to. That's it. I'm not hard enduroing the thing. I'm not just yeeting it up a mountain. So anyway, that's what I've been doing. More moto. It's freaking awesome. Utah's really cool. You know, don't visit, but it's really cool out here.
Yeah, good.
All right. Do we have questions and stuff that we should do maybe first? Do you want to do new stuff? What do you want to do?
Let's do some new stuff. Hold on. Yeah, we're going to do new stuff while Andrea forwards me some questions. And I want to be honest, new stuff is really, really thin right now, unless you think differently.
I mean, I'm really just kind of now looking. So to be honest, I don't have anything that crazy.
Yeah, it's kind of a slow week.
Well, let's just jump into it here. I'll bring one up. You probably know more about it than I do. SRAM is changing some Maven brake stuff.
We talked about that, didn't we?
Maybe we mentioned it. I don't know. That's a great question.
We mentioned the Maven B1. Essentially, they're changing the piston sizes a little bit to get a little bit different brake feel, and they've improved the lever to change brake feel a little bit, and it's all cross and backwards and forwards compatible, and only the new stuff will be made moving forward. So there's that.
There we go. So I guess essentially enough people complained that they were too grabby, and they change that, right? Is that an accurate statement?
I think so. I don't really know, to be honest with you. I don't know. Like, my stump jumper was an older, like, new old stock bike, so it had codes on it, so it wasn't really, like, I never rode Mavens. I don't know. People are like, there was complaints, but I don't know. Like, I just don't understand how, like, someone was like, oh, I went over the, like, almost went over the handlebars. I'm like, did you not touch, like, did you get on this bicycle and not touch the brakes until you started going down like a double black diamond DH run? Like, I don't get, like, to me, I listen to customer complaints, but that was one that I was always like, man, I just don't get it. And I will say that one thing about Mavens that is, you know, they recommended when those were first launched that if you're content or satisfied with your current braking powder or power, go down a rotor size, but most people couldn't. You know, you have a, you know, a Lyric and on a Santa Cruz, you know, they're both 180 native. You can't put a, and like if you were riding like codes with 180s or like a 180 200, like you could drop the front down, but there's nothing you can do in the rear to make them less, like, you couldn't follow their recommendations. So, yeah.
I think it's probably a good thing they did what they did. I never liked the way that the Mavens felt. Are they rideable? Yeah, they were rideable. Like, you get used to just about anything, but maybe that's just a case of it's too soon and all brakes will eventually be like the A1s were. I don't know that. But the TLDR seems to be, from just kind of reading around, I just don't have enough seat time on even the old Mavens outside of just, I never liked the way they bled. They're always a pain in the ass. The free stroke is too short. I thought they were too grabby. They leaked fluid from between the calipers, which was a feature. That was not a problem. That was a feature. But the TLDR is the B1 is a little bit lighter lever. The free stroke's a little bit longer, slightly less power, and that's kind of it. So a slightly softer, maybe more thought out Maven, essentially. So I'd like to spend some time with them. Hopefully they're good.
Yeah, I'm sure they work fine. You know, like, I do want to read through. I want you to understand how scraping the bottom Pink Bike is right now. And I need people to understand that if I'm talking about how they're scraping the bottom, I must be the real bottom. Oh, that I'm going to get eaten alive in the comments for that one, all bottom. So March 10th, review. After 13 years, Shimano Saint brakes are still on top for outright power. March 10th, Hayes Dominion A4 brake review. Ultralight lever feel or lever action and plenty of power. Then we get up to the 11th. Shimano XTR 9220 brakes. Consistency is key. Then
I think the reason that all this stuff is out there, by the way, is because they're doing like a huge brake roundup where
I understand that, but SRAM Maven brake benchmark for accessible power, and then like Trick Stuff, fancy and finicky. Of course they are. They're both fancy and finicky. And then Hope brake, strong and sensitive. Like, that doesn't tell me
I mean, unfortunately, someone has to come up with adjectives. I mean, I don't envy that job because they're just forced to put something in the title. It definitely would be cool if they just said, like, you know, Pink Bike reviews the Hope V whatever, and that should kind of be the end of it. But, you know, that's very German, even though I like that kind of just, hey, here it is. We live in America and everything has to be sensationalized. So they've got to come up with some ridiculously adjective-filled title.
I get it. I just don't like it, okay?
I don't like it either.
And also, like, I just want to run through this list. Like, where did they go? What did they say about Shimano? Because it just made me laugh. What did they say about the Saint? Still on top for outright power. Yeah, until they weep all their oil out and your brake sounds like a dying, like, dairy cow. Like, I don't understand how Shimano brakes are still a thing. I just don't. I mean, what are your thoughts? Like, are what you're seeing is just like, yep, it's all leaking out. Yep, it's all leaking out.
Yeah, we still see it. I don't hate Shimano brakes. I think they feel fine. And I think they're generally very easy to set up. They're generally very easy to bleed. You can, of course, find pads for them. I don't love the way the lever, like the bite is. I don't love that servo wave thing personally. I think it's a little bit too much. If it was just a little bit less servo wave, I don't want a direct lever. That's too squishy, in my opinion, typically. But I want some type of cam action in there, but just not quite as aggressive. I like basically everything about Shimano brakes. I don't love the feel, but the power is fine. It's the reliability these days that is unacceptable. You can't have, when every single brake weeps after 1 to 2 years of use, that's just not okay. So that's the big kicker.
All right.
But yeah, brake stuff. I haven't had time to be honest, but it looks like they've done a pretty, Pink Bike's done a pretty in-depth brake comparison, which is pretty cool. I mean, like, to me, I'll give Pink Bike props here, even though I've seriously just browsed a couple of these. It's neat that they've kind of gone back through and reviewed all these things kind of at the same time and like really compared them against each other. What I really hate are the reviews of, oh, here's the new thing that came out and oh, it's great. Well, it's brand new, you know, like, of course it's going to be fine and you're probably not going to find that much bad stuff to say about it. But I much more prefer having hey, today we did a head to head with these 8 brakes. here's what we liked about some, here's what we didn't like about some, here's the one that stopped the best, here's the one with the lightest lever pull, blah, blah, blah. And then you can kind of maybe make your decision based on that. I think that's much more useful than just a regurgitation of some stupid marketing wank that SRAM or Shimano or whoever sends out that they just retype, basically. Oh, it's got, you know, it's the C1 with the whatever and servo wave and all this just garbage that I don't care about.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm given slight props. Now, granted, I have not fully read all these articles. Maybe they're garbage, but from what I'm seeing, just quickly browsing them, seems pretty cool. So maybe stop on by and go read all their brake stuff.
Yeah, there you go. You want to talk about another thing that we're not going to enjoy?
Yeah, let's do it.
Petey's whole shot fast flow tubeless valves claim 200% of the airflow of Presta. Like, Jesus Christ, how fast do you need to air up your tires?
Yeah, on one hand, I'm glad that people are trying to make a better valve. But on the other hand, if you make anything that's not standard, now all of a sudden you've got shit that's not standard, and then you're probably going to have an issue. So, I don't know. Again, I get it. I still think most of these things, over given enough time, will still clog up to some degree. I'm glad they're trying to build a better mousetrap, but I've been riding Presta valves with sealant for a really, really long time. And do they get a little bit cloggy? Yeah. Just pull the damn valve core out. They're $1 and put new ones in once a year and you're fine. So it costs $2 and your bike's fixed.
Kenny, you should charge more for Stan's valves.
Well, I'm exaggerating a tiny bit. Maybe we sell them for $2.99 a piece or something like that. And I say valves, it's just the valve core.
Mm-hmm.
I only have to replace the valve core. You don't have to replace the whole valve. It takes 2 seconds.
I get it. Like,
there's too many goddamn valves officially. It's out of control. It's out of control. So yeah, maybe it's better, but I just don't care.
Yeah.
What else we got? CAD 14.
Oh my God. I didn't think you were going to bring that up, so I don't have it pulled up. I didn't look at it yet.
What do you mean?
I didn't.
Why wouldn't I bring that up?
I don't know. Because I don't know.
I really like aluminum road bikes. I mean, generally speaking, carbon road bikes are better. But I really do think that us as an industry, after doing the moto thing a decent amount, and granted, I spent a lot of money on my moto. I wish I didn't have to spend as much money as I did to get upgrades to make it, in my opinion, rideable. But all in, I am in less than, I'm in kind of like pro level Levo, mm-hmm. Not even quite S-Works level Levo. And I know we used to make fun of people saying, like, oh, I can buy a motorcycle for that. But truly, if you look at the performance of this thing and the longevity of this thing, it's like pretty damn impressive. The bike industry, the bikes are too expensive. Straight up, if you look at the parts of what they are, and I know there's not sizes and blah, 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 but I mean, I don't know, figure it out, bike industry. I just think we're too expensive. And I think we need to make some cheaper stuff, because you can have a really, really, really good experience on a bike that's half the price. I'm all about something like the CAD 14. As far as super details go, I mean, a couple things about this. I know I just said, hey, it'd be nice to have cheaper bikes, but it's actually not that cheap, because a frame is $1,800. And granted, that's going to come with a fork. Maybe it comes with a seat post. But that's not exactly cheap. Builds start at $2,500. That's not like really that cheap. I know we've had a lot of inflation over the years, but damn, that's pretty crazy. I remember my CAD 10. This is a long time ago, granted. This was, 12 years ago?
My 2010 CAD 10 was 2,200 pounds, old Tegra Mavic wheels, Mavic alloy, like, Axioms and an FSA carbon crank.
Yeah, that's what my bike was. Did we have the same bike?
I think you bought one like a year or two after mine.
Okay. But yeah, mine was Altegra 11-speed carbon crank.
No, mine was old enough that mine was...
Yours was 10-speed because mine was the first year of 11-speed.
And then I put the second-gen SRAM Red 11-speed on my bike.
Gotcha.
No, second-gen 10-speed, sorry.
But my bike was... I think it was $1,600 retail. And I know we got a lot of inflation. That's probably really all that it is. But damn, paid $1,600 for that thing. And I, of course, I EP'd it. I'm not going to say what I paid for it, but it was
not,
you know,
that much.
It was some percent less than that. And that was just such a good bike. Like, what value that bike was. It was incredible. I really didn't have to change a single damn thing on it. I was super happy with it out of the box. And that's when I was like, I'm actually not that snobby now. I'll just kind of ride whatever. I was more snobby back then because I was like, everything was new and cool. And I wanted to have, like, you know, a unique bike, but it wasn't even necessary. It was just so good out of the box. And I changed some things because I couldn't help myself, but I really didn't have to. So back to the CAD 14, I'm all about the concept. I mean, it's a UDH, you know, super hydroformed aluminum frame. It's pretty slick.
Yeah.
Do you remember how much your bike weighed? Because I don't remember how much mine was either.
I feel like it was in the 16-ish pounds.
Oh, wow.
17 pounds. I think I got it into the 16s with the SRAM 10-speed and tubulars.
Okay. Oh. Mine just maybe bone-ass stock. Mine was 18.
I don't remember now.
Yeah, I don't really remember either. I don't want to tell people wrong. But yeah, freaking cool bike. I'm all about it. I'm looking at this road crank on the CAD 14-2.
The rival crank?
Yeah, I didn't realize that it had a hole in it.
Yeah, the rival crank's got a hole in it now, dude. It's pretty dope.
Wow. Yeah, it's when you know you've made it. When you got a bike with a crank with a hole in it.
Unless it's a 5-dev.
Good stuff. All right, so that's the CAD 14. What else we got?
Newhouse will sell you a 32-inch frame today.
All right.
Right? Yeah, Newhouse Nova 32 production bike. $1,800, right? No, you said 18 was that one. Yeah, $1,800 gets you frame fork. $2,600 gets you a rolling bike, a rolling chassis is what they're calling it. So they don't say what wheels, but it's going to be frame fork, wheels, and tires. And then a complete bike's going to be $4,400 with XT. And that is a 32-inch rigid bike with carbon fork, sliding dropouts with a UDH hanger. And yeah, looks pretty neat. I really want to try a 32-inch bike. I don't know how to buy one. That's the problem.
And you really want to do a 32 front and rear?
I think so. Yeah, probably. I don't know, though. I'm not in a rush for anything. I think I'm going to ride it, though, and be like, oh, this is pretty cool. So
yeah, I'd love to ride one. I think I would just need, I couldn't deal with like single speed and rigid and all that crap these days. It would definitely have to be some full squish, even if it was like a 100 mil bike.
I think we'll see that stuff in the next year. I really do. The one thing, I know I wasn't around, but Kenny, do you agree that 29ers got good when we stopped trying to make them ride like 26ers?
Yeah, I think we were doing some weird stuff back then, and maybe I didn't know better, and maybe just because the rollover was so much better, I think we tried to make them handle way too sharply for some reason. And maybe just trails have evolved a little bit. I don't really know the answer to that, but yes, you're right. We tried so hard for so long. Like, oh my God, we have to have the world's shortest chainstays, and maybe we all bought into that a little bit, that was the most important thing in the world, but I really don't think it was that important.
Yeah, because when I'm looking at this, like, do you have the Newhouse pulled up?
I don't. Which?
It's on the old Bike Rumor.
Okay. It's called the Newhouse.
Let me see if I can make this easy.
There we go. I found it. Got it.
Okay.
And it definitely looks like that's what they're trying to do. And maybe we do to some extent because a 32 is, like,
well,
so big.
Well, let me finish. Now that you're looking at it, you see that seat tube, right?
Mm-hmm.
I just want them to go ahead and stretch that chainstay out till that seat tube can be straight. Like, I don't need a 32 that rides like my 29er. And if everyone out there that's like, you don't know what you're talking about. Like, no, I rode a HeyDuke LVS briefly, and that thing's got like a ginormous, like 650 chainstay. That's probably too much. But at some point after riding that bike, closer to riding the HeyDuke than today, I've talked in passing about trying to get a 500 chainstay bike. And I think that would be really good for this.
I wonder if some of our bias, if you will, is that we live out west now. And maybe just this style of riding being much more wide open. I much prefer stability now than I used to. Before, it was like, how nimble could I make a bike? And I think it was because we rode a bunch of tree gate trails that were dead flat. Maybe. That might be a thing. Just thinking out loud.
I know what you're saying, and I just want to disagree.
And that might be the thing. It might be just fine. I think you can ride just about anything through tight stuff, and you're going to be fine. You'd be very, very surprised what you can do. You might have to change your riding style a tiny bit. I've definitely changed my riding style for sure on these more modern bikes. And I also think about the stuff I can do on the moto, and it's gigantically long. And I'm never like, oh, this thing is, I can't make it around this corner or do this thing or whatever. It's completely fine. You just ride it a little bit differently and you get used to it. So I've probably changed my mind over the past 15 years, but I want to ride the longest, most stable, slackest bike for the most part that I can possibly get away with.
Right.
And then I'll learn to ride. And then I'll learn to ride it.
Yeah, because that bike that's so much calmer, you know, less twitchy, less snappy, slower, calmer, whatever you want to call it, more planted, it lets you get away with so much more. So I'm thinking, you know, you have long chain stays, you get a little more flex, probably a little bit more comfort. This bigger wheel would roll over things better. Like, think about just monster trucking down Wolf River trails. Like, yeah, there might be a tree gate or two that, you know, boomer, not the generation, the true human, or like, you know, someone that's ridden those trails for the last 20 years straight knows better than we do. Of course, they're going to be faster, but it's not like the bike wouldn't make it, you know?
Yeah. No, I'm very curious about 32s. I think it's going to be cool. I think, unfortunately, we got to wait another couple of years before we have enough, like, good tire and wheel and fork and options and all that kind of stuff. But I think it'll come.
I'm calling it a year.
I think it's really, there's not much. What else are we going to do in the bike industry these days, to be honest? Unless we get prices down, which needs to happen. We're going to do, I still am convinced we're going to do shorter cranks. I think that's going to become a thing that will stick. But what's the next revolution, really? Like, our suspension's gotten pretty darn good. Could it be better? Yeah, of course. You know, brakes have gotten pretty darn good. Everything's gotten pretty darn good. I think we've realized that, like, pinion gearboxy type stuff on a human powered bicycle just will not work. You can't cheat physics. You're going to lose. You can't lose 10% of your power.
Right.
That is, like, unacceptable in that world. It will not happen. So guess what? We're going to have chains for the foreseeable future. So I'm just trying to think. Yeah, chains and derailleurs. You got to have them.
Mm-hmm.
Like a chain system is just required because it's the best thing we can come up with that doesn't have a huge amount of losses. So what are we going to do next? And I think playing with some wheel sizes is going to be kind of the next thing that entertains us for the next few years.
Okay, yeah.
That's it.
All right. I'm not disagreeing with you in any way. Like, you're right. There's nothing else we can do. Like, brakes don't need to get better. Drivetrains don't need to get better. You know, in the days of 10 speed, we didn't say this is the peak, right? We just said, like, oh man, this shit's getting pretty good. Like, XTR 10 speed, like, holy dick. Like, this is good.
Yeah. Yeah. Without a doubt. I think two things need to happen. I think bikes need to get cheaper.
Okay.
And I think bikes need to get more reliable.
I don't think that we're going to see both of those. Because
I don't know.
The way we get cheaper is through more affordable materials, which make more affordable components, which don't last as well. And I think that part of the way they get cheaper, too, is what's accepted. You know, does Dior and NX not work that well because it's got a bunch of plastic in it? No, it's because the tolerances and all that stuff is probably different. You know, like, I just think that it can't get cheaper and be as good. And if it did get cheaper, it's going to weigh more and people aren't going to accept that. Like, I don't know that people are going to tolerate, you know, there's already some pushback on some of the aluminum bikes where they're like 35 pound trail bike, dude. Like, that doesn't make sense.
I'm not saying stuff needs to get prohibitively heavy. I just think I think there's going to be a lot of fine tuning on standards. Maybe it's a new headset standard. Maybe it's we figure out a more clever way of, you know, attaching a handlebar to a fork. Stuff like that, that can just make stuff easier, more robust, that kind of stuff.
Dude, what if we had stems that when you loosen a bolt, you could raise and lower your handlebars.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Hold on. And it's independent of your headset adjustment.
You're talking like a steer tube extender?
Quill stems. That's what I was thinking of. Sorry.
Yeah, I gotcha. You're right. Maybe we've gone backwards.
I think the answer would be like 1.5 headsets. That's how you could get a... Oh, God. I got it, Kenny. Remember how the lefty OPI stem tightened? You use like a bottom bracket tool to tighten it from the bottom?
Unfortunately, I do remember those.
So it's going to be a dual crown fork. It's going to tighten up like that, and then it's going to run a quill stem inside of it.
I hate everything that you're saying.
Because it would work well?
I mean, maybe. It would be ridiculously heavy, and I don't know if a quill stem is a robust enough thing. If you turn your handlebar too hard, it turns.
What about like just direct mount then?
I think more of a direct mount thing. I think that's the answer.
So dual crown direct mount?
We talked about it before, where we're getting to the point, especially maybe on 32s, where handlebars just connect to the crown of the fork.
Oh, yeah, that would be dope.
Or you have two kind of like, street bike style, like, where you have two independent bars.
Yeah. I'm in.
Like, why do we have the middle part? What the fuck is it doing? If you have a triple clamp, that
it's
is.
It's doing the middle part stuff.
Yeah, it doesn't need to do that middle part shit. We're wasting materials here.
Dude, and then you wouldn't need... Why can't I think of the word? Your bar wouldn't need sweep. You could buy clamp, like stems with sweep.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the two holes don't need to line up anymore. If you don't have a middle section.
You can already do that. I mean, you can do that on a sport bike now with clip-ons. You can just independently move them. And you can have more sweep or less sweep by just changing how you clamp them on the forks.
Oh, they've got like elongated holes in them?
No, like it's a round clamp that clamps to your fork tube. So you can just...
You just rotate it. So it would be clamping to like the stanchion in the dead zone between the double clamp or the dual crown. Okay.
That's correct.
Okay.
So I don't know. I don't think we're far off with what we have. I think we've kind of figured out the formula that works, but I still think we can make stuff better and more robust, like clearly.
Okay. All right.
All right. 32s. Any other 32s we want to talk about?
No. I really don't want to talk more about 32 right now. I can.
There's been yet another helmet recall. Why do we have so many helmet recalls? It's pretty insane.
Is this a nice helmet?
No.
I think there's your
answer. It's like an Amazon-y thing. They were sold between $5 and $18 a piece. So that's why.
I don't know why. Like,
on the other hand, though, is a $5 helmet better than no helmet? Probably.
Unless it like shatters and impales your brain with a part of it, I would say yes.
Yeah, that would be bad. But generally speaking, I would find it hard to believe that wearing a $5 helmet is less safe than wearing no helmet.
And I guess I understand that there's different people with different incomes, but like I don't know. Like I'm trying to put myself in the position of the person that thinks a $5 helmet's good.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
Like, there are certain things that I definitely will buy on Amazon. Like, I buy bike parts on Amazon. I'm not afraid of it. Like, you need some 17-millimeter long chain ring bolts for some kook thing you want to do. I guarantee you it's going to be cheaper and easier to buy them from Amazon than it is for me to buy them from one of my distributors. It just is. Because 17 millimeters might not be common, and then you have to buy something fancy like Sugino or something, and they're only in one warehouse, and it's going to take like a week to get here. Or I can get these stupid oil slick ones from Amazon with some spacers, and it's like $12, and it lands at my door in 2 days. Like, yeah, that's fine. They're steel bolts. You know, are there different grades of steel? Sure. Yeah, there is. When I put them on, did I know that the normal torque is X, and I went to like X plus 20% on one of them, and I'm like, seemed pretty good. I turned it a little more, and it didn't strip out, and I was like, okay, these are probably fine. And then I just loosened it up a little and torqued them all to the normal spec, and it was fine. It was totally fine, right? We're talking about a steel bolt, you know, and maybe like a computer mount. Like, yeah, roll the dice on a computer mount. What's the worst thing that happens? You break your mount off, and you're computer lands on the ground, like whatever. But I don't know that I would see myself buying like a handlebar or, you know, a suspension fork from Amazon. or from a, you know, Z-tier company, if you will. You think I'm crazy or somewhat right?
Yeah, I think that's reasonable.
All right. What would you not buy on Amazon, Kenny?
Any, like, for the most part, any actual component. Outside of maybe a chain ring or cassette, if you wanted to take the risk of it probably not working right, and it's probably not going to work right, I would never do anything that's load-bearing. I would never do a stem, a handlebar, probably not wheels, that kind of stuff. I'm not going to buy a carbon fork frame. No. No, I'd buy like bolts and stuff.
Sure.
All right. Rad Power. Got bought. Life EV. Bought Rad Power for about $15 million, which seems kind of cheap. I mean, they have a black eye right now. What'll be interesting is how liable are they for... I could probably read this whole thing. How liable are they for all the stuff that's out there and all the battery fires that are happening? I don't know the answer to that. What's interesting is it was about $13 million assets, and with the liabilities, it brings them to $15 million. So, like, only $2 million in liabilities? Like, I don't know. Something's weird about that. But weird stuff happens when companies buy other companies. You can totally get out of a lot of liabilities, which appears to be what happened here. But I don't know. Not an expert. I'm not a mergers and acquisitions guy. But that seems interesting. It seems $15 million for a company that big seems
pretty
like
cheap.
Not that much money, to be honest. But hey, who knows? Hopefully they do the right thing and actually fix the old problems. But I really doubt they will. I think they're just going to probably use the name. But how valuable is the name after all the stuff that went down? I don't really know.
I think it's still pretty good. Really, because
I guess the very average person just sees and hears about Rad Power. They probably don't know about all the lawsuit stuff.
Right. And when that bike is parked outside of the bakery that you go to twice a week, or, you know, in front of the coffee shop you walk by every day, and you're like, dude, I don't know, I just need one of these, like, I've never seen a bike this big, and it's got a motor, and it says Rad Power on the down tube, and you just Google it, and you buy one.
You know what's interesting is Life Power, the people that bought Rad Power, they also acquired Serial One,
which was
the Harley-Davidson venture into bikes. That was interesting. We looked at some Serial Ones, like met with the rep, looked at their bikes. They seemed, you know, they seemed decently put together and that kind of stuff. We didn't bite on it, but it's just interesting. Oh, wow. They're saying Rad Power's production will transition to the U.S.
Yeah. What? I don't know how that's going to work.
How in the world could you be competitive and do that?
I think if you read that more, I think they're going to move to U.S. assembly.
Yeah. I mean, they say production, but maybe you're right on that.
Right. Because somewhere, where was it? Oh, I went away from that page because I clicked into Life EV to look at their stuff. It says something about a foreign free trade where you're... Where'd it go? Using a foreign trade zone structure, it said components are expected to be sourced at the fabrication level from global suppliers, enabling higher quality standards, improved pricing, and greater visibility into tariffs and supply chain risk. Reduce overhead, streamline production, and deliver more consistent, high-quality bikes across its portfolio while supporting the growth of domestic manufacturing capabilities. So I think that is assembled in the U.S. with global parts.
I think that's probably accurate.
And if I had to guess, I bet it's cheaper to import all the parts of a bike than it is to import a complete bike.
It might be. Maybe they're onto something.
Yeah, I don't. It's not that I don't care. I don't know. Again, saying I don't care is the wrong way to put it, but like, it's all for money. And I'm sure that they're going to have wonderful legacy support for all their products. That was sarcasm. So, yeah. Any other good news, you know?
Let me do some scrolling here. That's pretty much all I got.
You know what brand really needs to simplify their website?
Who's that?
Kona.
Oh, did we talk about the Stan's keg thing?
No, we didn't. We didn't talk about the forbidden milkshake agitator.
Yeah. So, Stan's. Bike shops have always wanted larger quantities of Stan's because, well, we go through a lot of it. And I don't think anybody really enjoys throwing a ton of plastic away. And if you can get, you know, bigger economies of scale, you can sell sealant cheaper, especially if you're doing it at the shop level. Why not have a 64-ounce or 128-ounce? And there's reasons not to maybe have something that big, because then it becomes unwieldy. Like, having something that's roughly quart size that you can, like, easily fit in your hand and screw the top on and pour it into a tire, and it's not this like ungainly thing that weighs 10 pounds. I totally get it. But either way, people have been asking for a very, very long time for stands to do something about getting either cheaper sealant or just larger quantities of sealant. And that's kind of what they have here. So have used this machine. We kind of found, I really appreciate that Stans is trying to do this. Stans was nice enough to let us be part of the pilot program on this, and I gave them some feedback on it. But yeah, they were super nice, super cordial. I'm glad that they tried it. It was not really for us in the end, just because of how our shop operates. I just found that it was a little bit easier just to have that normal 32-ounce quart-sized thing
on every workbench.
Everybody just has one on their bench. Instead of having like this one thing that's in a central part of the shop, and then it becomes a traffic jam and all that kind of stuff. But I mean, the actual tech behind it, it's a neat idea. But you still got to fill up this giant vat with another giant vat of stuff. And it's, you know, it's stinky and it's ungainly, and you're going to drop and spill and splash stuff. And there were just not enough positives for us to personally do it, but I can totally see a shop that would love to do it. So if you're interested in that kind of thing, Stans has that as an option. So it's cool that they finally stepped up and offer that. In my opinion, I think that Stans should, and I know they're just not set up for it, I don't think, but I would much rather just buy a pallet of 32-ounce Stans at a better deal and just do that once a year or twice a year.
Have you tried?
What I would prefer personally. What's that?
Have you tried?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've been trying for 10 years.
Oh, I have an idea for you, Kenny. I'll tell you after we finish.
Okay.
No, I really
anyway.
Do.
But yeah, there you go. So Stans has a gigantic fill system if you are interested in it. So if you're in the bike biz, or if you're a crazy person and you want this in your garage, I'm sure you could probably do it.
God.
But yeah.
In your garage.
Stans. I think it's it's 5 gallons, I believe.
20 liters, yeah. Which would be what? 5.5 gallons?
Sure.
20 times 3 is 60, almost 5.5 gallons, yeah. We do have a couple of questions.
All right, let's do it.
If my computer will go over there. Let's see. Jeff C. says, question for the JRA crew. If y'all need questions for the show, or question for the crew if you need questions for the show. Are trail conditions in Colorado like those in California? For example, hard-packed clay. And if so, what kind of tires work well in those hard-packed trail conditions? It's been quite a while since I've ridden in those conditions. My general impression is that you just can't corner hard on clay like you can on loamy surfaces that we have in the Pacific Northwest. What do you think, Kenny?
I think generally speaking, anything that's loose over, which we have a lot of in Utah.
Yeah, that's really what we have too. We don't really have like buff, like clean dirt surface trails. Like they're all like loose over with like decomposed granite and crap like that in them.
Yeah. So, and that's definitely all of Utah is just loose over. Generally speaking, I think a softer compound, as a generality, it doesn't have to be necessarily soft, but a modern, grippy compound. Like, compound is more important than tread pattern, in my opinion. And I think, generally speaking, having a larger number of smaller tread blocks is usually the way to go. Having big old teeth with a lot of space in between them, that's really, generally speaking, for a loamy condition where you can dig down into whatever is your base material.
Like a DHF,
otherwise,
right?
Or yeah, kind of an Assegai, a DHF, like all these really aggressive DHE tires. They can still work fine in loose over. They're not like horrible, but and you might get into a situation where you're riding loose over with a tire like that and it's mediocre, and then you descend some ultra steep thing where you're just all on the brakes. And at that point, you could probably shovel that thing into the ground a little bit better. And you might appreciate that you have such an aggressive DHE loamy tire. But for the most part, soft compound, modern compound with a lot of small tread blocks to bite in, I think that usually works better.
All right. I agree.
What do you think?
I mean, I think the Aggressor and the Assegai have a place here, but only because I don't like a DHF and a DHR. They don't have intermediate knobs, and it's just not a tire for me. I've finally realized that I just like a tire with a good intermediate knob.
I'm the same way. I don't know how people, I just don't ride that way. I don't ride shroupy. I ride very smooth for the most part. And so I can't get away with a lack of intermediate knobs.
Yeah. So what do we have here for general riding? Like, I think the Assegai and Aggressor makes sense here because they have intermediate knobs and they do well when the trail is a little bit, like, they do a little bit better if it's kind of wet or kind of, when I say wet, I don't mean riding a wet trail as in like precipitation. I mean wet as in this creek crosses the enters the trail here and exits the trail, you know, 5 or 20 yards later. And it's just kind of soggy always, but it's a gravelly sog bottom, you know. I really like a Assegai Aggressor for that, but for just general rolling and how a bike feels and a bike actually like moving and doing some things, the Recon is just really hard to beat.
The Recon is just such a fucking good tire. I know it's getting kind of old now, but man, it's still been one of my favorite all-around tires.
If they ran the Aspen for like 20 years, they can run the Recon for like 10. I mean.
But yeah, if you're ever in doubt and you have something that is akin to loose over and you've never tried a Recon, Recons are so good.
And like, don't be afraid of that 2.6 front, 2.4 rear combo. Like, God, it's
Oh, hell
so
yeah.
Good.
I ran 2.6 front and rear Recon, whatever that soft compound one they had was, that was so good.
The Max 3C or whatever.
Eh, something like that. I can't remember which one it was. But
Max
damn,
Terra
3C
Teletubby Hearts or something.
You don't want to run that on the rear. That's going to be ridiculous. It's going to wear out A, super fast, and B, it's going to feel like you're riding through sand. But on the front, that thing was dope.
Yeah. Yeah, Recon is really hard to beat in Colorado. I don't know what it does in California, but I'm pretty sure it's not like when you cross the state line, it like blows off your rim like a sad arch rim or something. So
if you're riding through like mulchy type stuff, yeah, probably not the right tool for the job. But everywhere else in the U.S., for the most part, you know, whether you just got kind of a dry, leafy bed type stuff like we had in Memphis, for example, I think the Recon would be fantastic there. And most parts of the country, I think the Recon would be good. I think there's very few places that the Recon is bad.
Yeah. Have you ever ran a Forecaster?
No.
Dissector?
No.
Yeah, me neither. Like, this came up in text the other day, and my answer was, if a Recon doesn't cut it, I want an Assegai. Like, if it's going to start rolling slower, I just want it to fucking have all the grip. Just give me the grip. So
I could totally see myself, maybe I could do Assegai front, Recon rear. I can totally see me going that route if I stayed Maxxis. I do want to expand my horizons. My tires are about shot on my bike. I think I'm going to give Continentals a shot. So I'll give people feedback and I'll try a few different ones.
All right.
I really haven't messed. I've like not messed around with tires that much. I know I went through my fast track stint and on one hand it was kind of a joke, but on the other hand, I was really serious. Like it was just a very good tire for the type of riding I did. Was it undergunned for what I was doing? Like, yeah, it definitely was, but it kind of got the job done. But it shows you that a semi, not a file tread tire, but a lots of small knobs with a fairly modern compound work pretty damn good. Like, works better than you would think by looking at the tire.
You don't look at a Recon and think it's going to grip better than an Aspen, but it does. Do you think that Recon's better than Aspen in terms of just grip?
I don't have enough experience on Aspens.
No, I'm sorry.
I mean, I would
Ardents.
Okay, I was going to say, like, I didn't really understand your question. That's why I was trying not to answer it.
When you look at a Recon, you don't think it's going to work as well or better than an Ardent. Anybody that looks
than,
at an Aspen.
Than an Assegai.
No, Ardent, the tire that's discontinued, the tire we ran forever.
Oh, okay, got it.
Like, a Recon has a shorter knob height than an Ardent, but it has more knobs and, in my opinion, works better.
I would agree with that statement, 100%.
Yeah. Superfan Jake has a question. I need an inexpensive but not garbage suspension fork that is 1 1/8 straight steer, 80, or could be adjusted to 80 millimeter travel. That's the part that I'm kind of hung up on. With
80, that you're fucked.
Well, with QR dropouts, ideally has an air spring.
Sick. I'm gonna get you like a Suntour. It's $100.
well, if we could go to 100 millimeter travel, we could run the RockShox Recon Silver.
And you could probably like get an air spring for that. But by the time you do all that, is that worth the time or money or effort? I don't know. I'm sure he has reasons. Jake knows what he's doing. But does he have that restrictive of like a geometry requirement that he has to run an 80? Like, man, what if you maybe just ran 100 and run a little less air pressure in it? And now it's an 80.
Yeah. The Recon might be old enough that you can put the pucks in it. Like old enough technology that you can put the travel reducing pucks in it.
You might be able to, yeah.
Because I'm looking at a Recon air spring right now, and like part of the exploded parts is air pucks. So
I'm trying to remember on those old Reba Recons, you just added spacers underneath the air spring.
Yeah, but those were on dual air, and it looks like they brought this to solo air as well. But just in
I think on the solo airs you could do that too.
Like the first solo airs?
Yeah, the first solo airs.
All right, cool.
Like the solo air that they made after the dual air.
Right, that's what I mean. Like the first gen of one airport.
Yeah, exactly. I know on the new like gold 35s, I'm 99% sure that they run a similar setup to that, where you just add underneath the air spring, like you have to take the air spring apart, but you basically just add a puck. It's not a puck, like you don't just pop your air cap off. You have to like take your lowers off, take your air spring out. But then once you have your air spring out, you add it on the shaft where it's inside of the fork, and boom, you reduce your travel.
Yeah, you're limiting how far the fork can return to full extension. Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like it goes between it's like you put it under the top out bumper, essentially.
100%, yep.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's how those work. I would say in general, Jake, probably go seek out some type of RockShox product because it's going to be just the most tunable for what you're trying to do.
All right. Yeah, and then we have one more. I have so many different things open right now. Like, I have 3 different Google Chrome profiles open at once. I'm a monster.
Wow.
With multiple tabs on each, and I'm recording on this computer. It's having a rough go. Next question from Rob Jabala. Sorry, Rob G. Which episode did you guys discuss the new Norco revolver? Who? We didn't.
Did we discuss that?
I don't think so. It's been out for a little bit. Like, came out last fall. I'm just not interested in their bikes. I don't really know how else to put it. Like,
so looking at this, I don't hate it for what it's worth. I mean, it seems to be like every other 120 mil kind of modern Buff XC downcountry trail bike, whatever you want to call it. It seems reasonable, I guess. I would say it's not that I don't think you should have an off brand, or that smaller brands don't make good bikes, or that they don't deserve a chance or whatever. So I would say if your local bike shop or whoever you're affiliated with really supports Norco, I don't really see anything obviously wrong with it. Only stuff I'm seeing is on this particular build, it has Shimano Di2. I personally don't know why you would ever run that drivetrain. It's just not as good as SRAM. I don't know how else to say that. And it's not unbelievably cheap. It's average weight. I mean, what am I missing here? There's just nothing compelling about it for me. I don't think there's nothing about it that's terrible, but there's just nothing about it that's amazing. So maybe I would just say, why don't you get a little bit more mainstream bike, or personally, and people might disagree with me and that's fine. Get something with a SRAM drivetrain on it. They've basically done... So it's like they chose the opposite shit of what you should choose. They put SRAM wheels on it with a Shimano drivetrain. What the fuck are you doing? What? It's like they built it with all the leftover shit in the wholesaler catalog. By the way, today we had a brand new bike getting last minute QC'd going out the door. People can read between the lines and figure out what it was. It was reserve wheels with a zip hub on a road bike. And the rear hub was locked up from the factory. Fucking cool.
Wait, reserve with zip? How?
I said the same thing. I said, what the fuck am I looking at? And sorry, SRAM. I mean, I'm always just going to say it like it is. I think SRAM right now, generally speaking, makes the best shit just as an overall overarching statement. SRAM just makes really good stuff. However, God damn it. Like, stop trying to make either make a good wheel or don't make wheels. Just don't fuck around with this stuff. Let someone else do it. Put that money into something else, please. And they can't figure out hubs.
Hubs are hard, man.
I'm not saying that they're easy.
And it's not like the patent on DT is gone or anything. Wait, it is.
So anyway, back to this bike, back to the Norco. I don't absolutely hate it. So like we've said, or like I've said a lot, I think so many of these bikes are so good and they're all in a fairly level playing field. If you were buying a Norco for what I would consider the right reasons of, hey, all my buddies ride Norcos and they really like them, or hey, my local bike shop who I really like, they carry a Norco. Awesome. Go get a Norco. But if you're just sitting at your computer and you're like, oh, here's a Norco, it's different, I'm going to buy that, I think that's the wrong reason to do it. So that's what I think about the Norco Revolver.
Yeah, I mean, I just did a little quick Googling, and like over the Revolver, like I would go with the Fazar or the Ari Signal Peak over that bike. I mean, you get for $5,000, you can get a full carbon frame, two water bottles that go where they're supposed to, not that inline bullshit like the Norco. Select Plus, regular XT, but DT wheels. Let's see. House brand bars and stem, Transex seat post, which is totally fine. How much does it cost? Oh, yeah.
And by the way, the Revolver C1 that I'm looking at, that is kind of their higher end build. So $8,000 is not like crazy for that. I just don't like the component choice on it. I would have to look. I don't have it here in front of me on this one review. They definitely make a $5,400 one and a $3,400 one. I don't know exactly what those builds are. Hopefully they're, you know, hopefully they're not Shimano DI2.
I mean, you can get the Team XX bike from Fazar or Ari. I keep wanting to call it Fazari. $9,000, you get flight attendant with XXSL transmission and high top wheels. So same wheels, but XXSL transmission.
Yeah.
And let's see. Oh, also, when you buy an Ari, it seems like, if I'm reading between the lines here, these bikes don't have a seat post in the box. Because seat post, it tells me what model it is, but then it says customized sizing through the custom setup. So, like, you could tell them, hey, I need a 175, and they'll put it in the bike. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Dude, comes with Recon Races. Come on.
Yeah, they could have just put the proper tire on there.
I mean, Recon Race is pretty proper when you're trying to make your bike light and fast right out of the box.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. Yeah, Rob, we're just not that into Norco, unfortunately. I don't know if you sell them. You did email from a bike shop.
I think it might also be a tiny thing here that over the years at different shops and different times, and I'm not calling out anyone in particular, but at least for us, from what I can remember, the Norco reps are a little bit aggressive and just think that I should just, like, you know, drop Specialized and carry Norco type thing. And I'm like, yeah, are you sure about that?
Yeah, I did get to ride one of the Revolvers recently.
Yeah.
I mean, I just rode it around in the street and it felt like a Flex Day 130, 120 bike. Yeah, it was odd.
Just some weird stuff. I think it's just a weird...
No, let me go back.
It's not how I would...
What was odd
is... It's not how I would build a bike.
I was told that I didn't weigh what I weighed when I asked the owner of the bike, who happened to be a representative of the company. And I was like, cool, I want to ride it. It's set up for me. And he's like, you don't weigh that much. And I'm like, yeah, I do. And he's like, no, you don't. And I was like, I don't know, man. I know how much I weigh.
I'm looking at the C2 build, and it's got a SID fork, but it still has a Shimano drivetrain. I think it's Dior DI2.
Oh, God.
Have
you touched that stuff yet?
What, Shimano?
No, Dior DI2.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I've only seen XT and XTR.
Yeah, it's the same as the XT stuff. I wouldn't ride it personally. I'm actually really confused. That's actually, it's got some Dior on it, but it actually has an XT Di2 rear derailleur on the C2 build. That's weird. Maybe they just like ran out of Dior.
No, it's
Di2 rear derailleurs.
It's the old days of like, oh, it's got an XT derailleur. It's an XT bike.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's so, why not just make the bike $100 cheaper and put a Dior rear derailleur on it?
Stance arch rims.
Weird. Just, I mean, who is picking this stuff?
Canadians.
If someone asked me, here's the problem. Like, I'm not trying to be too funny here, but I am. If I was tasked with building a terrible build kit, I would build this bike.
Terrible in the sense of like,
it's expensive, but not good.
Exactly. That's what I mean. Like, we're not talking about just, okay, let's slap some micro shift 10 speed on here and a bomber fork. That's, the bomber's probably fine, but it's way too heavy for this application. Right. And then like,
it's all that kind of stuff. It's just, it's not that this stuff is bad. It's going to get you down the trail, but there was a better decision that you could have made and you didn't make it. That's the problem. All right. Well, that's the revolver.
Yeah.
I'm going to now look up the C1. Good Lord. What is, it's actually been so long since I've looked at like actual builds of bikes for whatever reason. Revolver C1. Here we go. Oh my gosh. I'm an idiot. Sorry. The C1's the nice one.
C3.
Wait a minute. But this one. Yeah. Yeah. But we want to do the C3. My bad. I'm clickety clacking around. I'm almost done. All right. So we got a Reba fork. Okay. Great. Mechanical Shimano, you know, yeah. And okay, more importantly, what wheels? So for the price, this is a $4,000 bike. It is carbon, so that's like pretty impressive. I wonder if the C3 is going to be the best one yet. Let's see. Wheels. Here we go. Dior hubs on WTB I27 rims. So yeah, I actually think that other than the weight, I think that the cheapest build that they have is the best build.
All right.
Yeah. Like if somebody asked me, I will give you these Dior hubs on I-27 WTB rims, or you can have Stan's arches, I would pick the I-27s.
Oh, me too. 100 times over. Yeah. Like that would be my jam. Like, I don't know. People are funny. Bikes are funny. Things are hard, man.
Any more questions?
Nope. Time for patrons.
All right, let's do it.
Oh, God.
When I say let's do it, you do it.
I'm not good at this.
I can tell.
Fuck you. My screen is too small, so I have to scroll back and forth to find the dollar amounts and the stuff. I'm going to go up and... Okay, it's not till that person. Okay. All right, so starting at $10 a month, we've got Kurt, Skunk and Yo Trap, Jim the Fucked Up Trike Guy, Burt Reynolds Crusty Stash, Zozo, Eric, Burt Reynolds Mustache, Taper Bore Pro, My Pal Dow, MTB Shenanigans. Hey, which one of you is Clayton? Cam Irish 1, Tennessee Zach, Green Giant, AJ, Leland, Kenny Lovestain, Ride Time Extended, JC, Gordon, Josh, Fart Noises, Tom's P, Ryan, Bill, Aaron, Beaver Pelt Pocket Pool, Ty, Noah, Cool Beans. Ooh, she nasty. No, my name is Clayton. Frank the Tank. Goat Roper. Automatic Dysfunction makes you unsympathetic. ChatGPT at Autonomic. Sorry, Andrea corrected me from the other room. At $11.11 a month, we got Candace Cockfit. Then, I might be doing this wrong. I think I'm doing this wrong. We're just going to roll with it. Oh, I did this wrong. We're rolling with it. It's fine. Jesus Christ.
Are just the amounts wrong? Because you can just say the names.
Patamelon Disco Ball, Andrea's Moaning Podcast. Oh, this is actually, but they spelled it whore. No, I don't know who this person is. And then at $20 a month, we've got Scott, Joe, I Want a Mustache Ride from Burt Reynolds, Poop Wrench, Kenny Fullface, You Are Not the Father. Oh, that was a Mari. Harley. What's Troy? And at 50, we got Six Pack Outdoors now offering discounted Venezuelan fishing boat tours. It's a blast. Jesus Christ, that's really a lot to do at once. What else you got, Kenny?
That's it. Shut it down.
All right. Well, you heard the man. Thanks for listening. Ride safe. Don't buy $5 helmets from Amazon. And see you next week.
Thanks for tuning in to the Just Riding Along Show.
shit coming out of your brake pads.